equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
And we run into a little hiccup with Mig because he's got an appointment that he's got to get to. So we'll table Mig to Wednesday, if I'm going to guess, based on everything else. Yeah. All right. So, Brad Cox, I originally told Brad 10:40. So this could work out okay. All right. So we'll get Brad Cox in instead. Sorry about I guess we lost a few with minutes. I was already going to be 15 minutes late with Mig because I felt it was important that we get those conversations in with Bob Duncan and with Mike Hopkins as well, from those two perspectives on the Friday disaster. I don't think it's wise to under characterize what went on. You know, just call it a miscue or a, you know, it was a flat out disaster. You know, and I know that one of the knee-jerk reactions is to say, well, there was a record handle, so nobody didn't bet. Nah, that's nobody walked away Saturday and didn't bet. People are profoundly annoyed and. It's not a situation that can be easily just forgotten about. I mean, there were people that showed tickets for six figure scores. There were people playing in the BCBC that cost them, their last hit of Friday, and positioning themselves into Saturday. And on that topic, let me while we scare up. I told Brad that we were running late, but now we're back on time, sort of. Let me give everybody the result from the BCBC. Since it came up, I sent out the link yesterday to the final standings. Matt Miller, Chicago-based, well-established contest player. You see his name regularly, $142,800. He was the only player in the field of 500 plus. He was the only one that broke the six-figure mark. 142,800 plus the winnings from the, you know, from the prize pool. So well over 500,000 plus for Matt. We'll talk to him later this week. Jonathan Kinchin. Jonathan with another great run in the BCBC. Jonathan second. He was looming and moving up the board steadily. 95,974. Dennis Montoro played great, and he was a longtime leader. It's not easy to be on top of that leaderboard. 91,245 to be third. Christy Moore, talk about an institution on the contest landscape. 83,900 for fourth, and Chris Gruch, 74,550 was fifth. Bill Schenvert. Schenvert's amazing. Just incredible. Charlie Thompson, Chris Podritz, Braden Selvig, and Edward Diamond. There's your top 10 in the BCBC. More on that as the week unfolds. Right now, Brad Cox joins us, and you know, the Breeders' Cup Classic in particular felt like it went through Brad either on the front end or from a stalking basis. If Nick's Go was going to get engaged and worn down, the essential quality was seemingly there to poised to pounce. As it turned out, it was Nick's Go all the way around. And honestly, Brad, was it ever in doubt as you watched it unfold? Congratulations.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Well, you know, from a trainer standpoint, it's, you know, count your chickens before they hatch, I can tell you that. But, you know, we were in a good position with both horses, you know, leading up to the race and just how they were doing and how they were breezing coming into it. And, you know, I played out. Both of them ran fantastic races. And, you know, it just ultimately it was a better setup for Nick's Go. And, you know, he prevailed. And it was, you know, both horses run incredibly well.
What was your expectation into the race, both, you know, from a lead-up standpoint and then as Saturday had unfolded? Because, you know, you're watching the racetrack. There's a case to be made that the, I won't say that we had a dead rail like we did 4 years ago, but it did feel like the inside wasn't the best place to be. Then, of course, there's the frenetic collapse insanity of the distaff an hour and change earlier. What, you know, what was on your mind as the weekend unfolded toward the nightcap?
Well, obviously, we were a part of the distaff and part of the hot pace with There's the Devil. But, you know, after the race was over, after the dust had settled, I was walking back to the barn before the Classic to check on the two big horses and start getting them ready. I thought, you know, we obviously can't take anything away from Nick's Go. It's just what we're gonna send him away from there. And you know, I don't know if that changed anyone's game plan as to what they were gonna do, but it definitely made you scratch your head a little bit after watching the distaff and how quick they went. And you know, the odd thing was, you know, I asked Floron, obviously, when he come back from She Dares the Devil, I said, you know how fast you were going? He was like, no, what, 47? And sure enough, you know, they were ripping along. He's like, man, she was just cruising along, and she looked like it. Honestly, in She Dares the Devil, I thought, you know, at the half-mile call, I thought, you know, I saw the half-mile 44 and 4 and thought, oh, wow, it's going to be possible for these horses to keep going. And at the half-mile call, she was traveling best of anyone that was up close. But then, obviously, when they got to around the 3/8 or 5/16 pole, you could tell the closers, you know, the horses from the back of the pack were starting to close a little bit, and we just weren't going to have enough to sustain that run. But you know, in regards to the pace, I thought, you know, there was only one way to ride Nick's Go, and it's be aggressive. He broke really well, and you know, they just kind of really left him alone. I think some of the other horses with speed, I mean, you know, they asked him to run out of there, but I think he's just kind of showed that he's the fastest, and you know, he was able to, you know, clear off going into the first turn.
That, yeah, when he established, and then when you got to the to the backside, and you could see that, you know, he was in that comfortable beat. One thing that certainly was discussed leading into the Breeders' Cup was that if there's a horse that was going to be a little challenged in that 10th furlong, this was a racetrack from a speed standpoint and a configuration standpoint that would help him. I mean, how conscious of that were you going into Saturday?
Very. I mean, we kind of had set our sights on, you know, this, you know, back, say, maybe after the Cornhusker, or, you know, if he performed well in the Cornhusker, then went to the Whitney and took care of business, you know, we'd definitely, you know, turn our attention toward the Classic because of, like you said, the configuration of Del Mar, speed's good, and, you know, his ability obviously get the lead and clear off. We didn't know that would happen back in the summer, but, you know, the closer we got, the more confident we had that he would get the mile and a quarter, and it was really never a doubt in my mind that he could get the mile and a quarter. I guess there's always a little bit of doubt, but I felt fairly confident that he would get the mile and a quarter with just the way he performed at a mile and an eighth this year. And we, you know, just a very similar race. I don't think there was a whole lot of difference in his mile and eighth race and his mile and a quarter race the other day.
No, and when you look up and down, at the splits of, you know, of the races this year, you know, it's kind of funny that the race that you know, is going to be the outlier technically is the Met, where, you know, for people that were saying constantly, oh well, he's a horse that it's got all this speed, and in fact that's the only, you know, that's the only glaring blemish. The Saudi Cup, I got very little. I don't really particularly care about the whole concept. But when it came to his domestic efforts, the Met's the one miscue. So it kind of throws in the face, Brad, the concept that, oh, this is a horse that, you know, that is going to be best winging it on the front end, and that he can't, you know, be successful to turning a real route of ground. In fact, it's the opposite of that.
Yeah, no, for sure. He's a better horse when he's, you know, able to, you know, just break. And, you know, obviously when you're running two turns, jocks are not as aggressive early on. They tend to, you know, you got to go into the turn with a little bit. And he just runs the turns extremely well. He just doesn't really slow down around the turns. And, you know, he's not a big, huge horse. He's what I call a medium-sized horse that just really accelerates in the turns and doesn't really slow down like maybe some bigger horses have to do. But you know, he's very fast, and you know, he obviously can carry his speed a long way.
Going back, and you know, you had three before this championship season, essentially. He's going to be champion older horse. He's going to be horse of the year. And talk about the early work with him, and that, you know, you basically kicked the tires with him going all the way back to last February, then the time off, and you know, a couple of allowance races, and it almost seems like, you know, he was a work in progress as a 4-year-old, and you know, by the time he got ready for, you know, for the 5-year-old season, he was a complete animal.
Yeah, you know, he's yeah, and when we pick this horse up, you know, we just, you know, deal with June Park. He is the racing manager for Korean Racing Authority, and asked me to take the horse to Oakland. I said, yeah, sure. But, you know, and we agreed that, like, look, let's just let's let him get his feet back underneath of him. Let's put him in some, you know, realistic spots where he belongs, I guess you would say. He was training extremely well at Oakland winter before, and you know, we tried the two other than it was a race that made the most sense, and it was a solid two other than. I think it was a decent sized field that day. Joe Talamo rode him; he did a good job. He broke well, and he ran a big race, and he got his confidence back. Went on the sideline with an injury after that. The injury did not happen in the race; it happened training. He got some time off. We talked about retiring him, sending him back to Korea. I told Gene, I said, you know, listen, you give this horse an opportunity to come back. If he doesn't train well, we'll just pull the plug on him and he can, you know, start his, you know, stallion career, which would have been this past winter. And, you know, he trained extremely well. And, he, you know, the three other thing was sitting right there at Keeneland at the beginning of the meet. And I remember it was for a Saturday. The race didn't go, and it came back for Sunday. And I thought, man, this race probably isn't going to go. It did go with a shorter field, and he was dominant. I think he broke the track record going a mile and 16th. And at that point, I had no idea I was going to run this horse in the Breeders' Cup mile. I was thinking more like maybe get a race into him and point for the Clark. And, you know, the Breeders' Cup mile was there. He loves Keeneland. And it worked out well, and you know, he just kept taking, improving and taking a step forward, and he, you know, obviously become, you know, the best horse around two turns on the dirt in America.
Well, and that, you know, that's to your credit. The series of nine furlong wins, and then culminating in the performance on Saturday, just one of those horses that if anybody wanted to come and confront him, they knew where he was going to be, Brad.
Exactly.
It comes away with, you know, with this win, and I know that. You know, people are excited and rightly so about what this meant, the weekend meant for, you know, Japan's involvement on the international stage and coming, you know, here for this event. But there's some real positives associated with the KRA and having campaigned this horse. This is, you know, Korea's become a very, very nice companion to American racing. They race on dirt in Korea. They buy a lot of horses at auction that feeds their program. And I haven't seen as much said about what this means between American and Korean racing interests.
Yeah, for sure. You know, they have obviously they have a formula for selecting yearlings and 2-year-olds in training, and they've had some success with not only Nixco but with some other horses, and you know, they have supported the racing and the sales here in America, and I think they know that if they're gonna, you know, have top dirt horses, this is where you find them here in America.
There, we're going to talk to Jay Pribman tomorrow. There was Jay's follow-up piece yesterday that was tantalizing, I think, for players and fans, the prospects of one more race for Nick's Go, one that could potentially match him up with Life is Good out of the Dirt Mile win. Some thoughts about where things stand and you know, what you know, you've proven over the last couple of years that if they're going to ask you should the horse stay in training a little longer, your answer is always yes.
yeah, no doubt. But you know, we've talked it over, and you know, obviously he will be retired to TaylorMade in February, so it does give us an opportunity to get one more run into him as long as he's doing well. He appeared to come out of the classics in good order. Central Quality looked great as well. Obviously, he's retiring to Darley, and they're going to leave California tomorrow, and they'll be back in Kentucky on late Tuesday evening.
Well, that's tough. You've had one major departure out of the barn this season that. You know, always hard to see the van pull up. This probably just as tough.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Central, both horses, I mean, have done so much for us. And Central, you know, took us, you know, he and Amanda Loon took us to our first Kentucky Derby, and it was a great experience. And, you know, champion 2-year-old, and hopefully has done enough to earn another championship and his top 3-year-old. And, you know, just, you know, fantastic career, and what he's done, you know, at 2 and 3, you know, hopefully has him set up for, you know, a tremendous book of mares. I know he'll be well supported from not only Darley but Ben Godolphin, but the you know, people throughout the breeding industry, and hopefully he'll you know, have a chance to be a top sire for sure.
What were your thoughts before we say goodbye to him? What were your thoughts? Because he kind of loomed, and I suppose that Nixco, you know, made everybody look like they were, you know, that they were running in place. Some thoughts about, you know, about his trip, and if you thought at any point that he was, you know, making any kind of a move toward contention.
Well, he was probably, you know, I didn't really, I guess, expect him to be as close as he was up the backside, honestly, because I thought the pace, I know they went 46, but I thought the pace could be a little quicker. He was laying in a good spot. He kind of was being ridden along, but it's a 3/8 pole. He was down on the inside, and you know, he started passing horses, and I mean, you know, it was a good group of horses. So I mean, he was really the only horse that really was running on at the end, I thought, or making up any ground. I thought deceivingly a very good race. Louis said he might have been a little tentative down on the inside. Wish he could have maybe got him to the outside, but I think the way he broke and where he laid in the race, it was really the only position or route he could have taken around there. But overall, I thought he ran really well, and he bounced out of it in good order. So, you know, very solid horse, and we knew the mile and a quarter wasn't going to be an issue, and he stayed on and was able to, you know, get past Hot Rod Charlie late, and was running at Medina Spirit late as well.
Well, you referenced what is going to be a very interesting conversation on the 3-year-old championship front. So we'll let that play out, and still pretty satisfying, undoubtedly, to, you know, send him off with a career record of 8 wins from 10 starts, and a third in the Breeders' Cup Classic, ending the season for you, you know, running 1-3 in the Classic. That. There was only a slightly better result that I suppose running 1-2, which was I'm sure the ultimate goal, you know, heading towards Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. We felt like it was, you know, attainable. We thought we could get it done, and you know, we weren't discouraged with obviously the performance from essentially. It was a big run, and I was very happy with it. I would like for him to have been second, but you know, he did run a very, very good race, and we'll accept the result. And you know, right now it's time to move on to stud for him.
Let's talk about a couple of other spots and results. We'll talk about Friday in a second, but you referenced She Dares the Devil. And, you know, I told people early when we were just starting the show, you want to talk about a classic collapse chart where horses that were 11th, 10th, 9th, 8th, and 7th through a half mile and through a quarter end up 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th. That's the textbook. And actually, She Dares the Devil finished best of those that attended the pace to be sixth.
Yeah, it was a tough race to watch, and it was deceivingly, I thought, a very, very good race from her. I mean, like you said, she was really the only one that, I guess you would say, split the field with you know, being up close to that hot pace. And I never thought that they would go that fast. I don't know if any of those guys thought they would go that fast, but she looked really good, the half mile pole. Obviously, we'd already saw the half mile in 44-4 and kind of cringed a little bit. But, you know, she did run a big race. She actually shipped back on Sunday morning to Fasig Tipton. She started her journey back. She arrived at Fasig Tipton in Lexington, and she's going to be offered tomorrow night, Night of the Stars at Fasig Tipton. And,
yeah,
you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, and, of course, the sales at both Keeneland and Fasig. This is always a fascinating couple of days with the. In fact, I should reach for the. There's the Night of Stars, the November sale catalog right there. Glad you said that. Put that in the corner. for out from under a stack of PPs. Friday, Brad, the best result came from Juju's Map, Echo Zulu, that race, the way things unfolded. When Hidden Connection didn't break, pretty much Echo Zulu had things her own way. But Juju's Map, a good second in there, and sets her up for a nice sophomore season.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. We're very happy with the effort. He really didn't get away quite as well as we would have liked. We'd like to have been a little bit closer to the pace, or maybe, you know, taking break a little sharper and be a little closer, but overall, very, very good effort. She battled to be second, and you know, not discouraged at all with her performance. And you know, we'll rebound and turn our attention toward a spring campaign for her. You know, we'll at some point ship her down to the fairgrounds. She's one that'll leave California tomorrow morning, and you know, get her back to Kentucky and come up with a game plan for her. And obviously, the Kentucky Oaks would be the goal in the spring, and we'll try to work our way back from that.
Nice. The Juvenile Fillies Turf, we talked to Bobby Flay to start the show, and obviously a horse that rallies from the back of the pack. But that race was certainly affected when Bubble Rock got away badly. And the chances for her, Brad, seemingly were, you know, to break on top and you know, control the race from up front.
Yeah, her race was over at the start. She kind of hopped at the start and just didn't get away well at all. So it was over. You know, Irad came back and said, you know, was apologizing. I said, I mean, you don't have to apologize. That just happens. I mean, it just didn't have any racing luck and things didn't go her way and she didn't break like she was meant to. And, you know, just cross it off, get her back, maybe give her a little break. She's had four runs now as a two-year-old and probably, you know, asking or needing maybe just to be freshened a bit. Same thing with Turner Loose. She broke, was in a great position. Just, you know, really wasn't traveling quite as well as I could see it on TV. She just wasn't, you know, really into the bridle traveling for Florent quite like, you know, we needed her to. And, you know, I just think she ran a very, very flat race. She was pretty much done at the 3/8 pole and, you know, whatever, you know, maybe running back a little quick from Keeneland. She ran hard at Keeneland. You know, she had two maintenance works since, and then the ship to California may just been a lot in a short period of time for a two-year-old filly. That another one that's had four runs is at two, and you know, probably wanting to be freshened a little bit. We'll hopefully get her back in the spring.
Very nice. Well, in addition, of course, plenty of other Brad Cox trainees over the last week, and since we spoke last, you had that Lady Rocket win, right? The Pumpkin Pie, one of the divisions, the faster division, and Plainsman and the Bold Ruler last week was third. Tell me about that maiden winner at Churchill. I want to say Antitude.
Antitude's a violent filly that won an auction maiden ran really well. She showed us enough of the mornings to, you know, obviously give her a start, you know, maiden special way. But with, you know, she was actually purchased for $45,000, which is the cutoff for the auction maiden. So that made sense to start her there, and she showed up and ran well and ran kind of the way we expected. She trained forward enough of the mornings and give us the confidence that, you know, she'd be competitive first time out, a couple sharp gate drills, and she showed up and ran a big, big race.
How about, we should really ask about Famed as well from last week.
Yeah, we think she's a good filly. Obviously, she's a half to Essential Quality by Uncle Mo. You know, you'd think her, you know, that's probably her last run for the short term around one turn will stretch her. Always thought she's a filly that'll stretch, but thought she had enough speed to be effective around one turn. That's two runs for her. A good second first time out, followed up with a big win at Keeneland and off track. And, you know, she's back at Churchill. And we may get a run into her before the end of the meet at Churchill. Don't know if that'll be an allowance or a stake. We'll just kind of freeze her maybe in the next week or so and kind of figure out where we are. But she's a nice filly. We really think she's got a bright future.
How much alike or how different from Essential Quality?
You know, she's a really big filly. She's you know, Essential's a good sized colt, but she's really big. She's obviously, she's not gray, she's bay. She's by Uncle Mo. They have some similarities, I feel like, you know, mentally. to physically look at them. I mean, they're both good-looking, big, strong horses. She's probably, she actually looks like a colt. So, I mean, she looks really good. But I think there's some similarities mentally, but, you know, overall, physically, you know, they're obviously different color. But there's some similarities, I think.
Want to ask you, too, yesterday you had the allowance winner at Churchill, that Amendment 19. And it's funny, this is a horse that I had, I brought it up on air, the fact that Judmont had, you know, had bought a horse that was in training. And this is interesting to some degree, too, because the breeder of Amendment 19, that's that Angie Moore who bred Nick's Go. But an allowance win yesterday for Amendment 19.
Yeah, she's a nice filly, we think, and a Maryland bred as well, same as Nick's Go and same breeder. And yeah. Garrett had a rookie from Judmont, had, you know, did all the homework, and they had decided to buy her privately after her second place effort at Saratoga in an allowance race to Palmer Swirl. And you know, he said, hey, look, we're gonna buy this filly. And I noticed that it was the breeder. I mean, I that's kind of, you know, the same breeder as Nick's Go and Brace, you know, born on the same farm. So yeah, that's pretty amazing. Small world, I guess. But she performed really, really well yesterday. We think, you know, she ran a big race at Remington, which almost second, but she got a graded placings worth something. She's by, you know, what I think is one of the top, you know, top sires we have in the country. Just getting started with in Constitution. She's a beautiful filly, and you know, that's you know, that first level allowance was there. She's lightly raced, so I think she needs some more experience. I think she'll be even better around two turns. And she performed well yesterday. Was able to set close to you know, a good pace and finish up, and you know, definitely think she's a great, you know, have graded stakes in the near future for her.
I just pulled up the fig 80 buyer yesterday in that win, and had run a and had an 88 at Remington, but you know, one by two, one by basically in hand with Giroux and Brad. They're asking, of course, about this week, and let me ask you about two or three maidens coming up. You got Bodoc at Indiana. It's closing week at Indiana Grand. They'll go till Thursday to Veterans Day, and there's going to be this big Veterans Day send off in the Pick Five, but. What about Bodoc on Wednesday?
Yeah, he's been one of the street boss out of the APND mare that, you know, I think he'll be effective. He could be effective first time. Probably a horse that's going to want more ground, but you train well enough to, you know, where he should fare well enough going around one turn. 5.5 could be a little short for him, but I think it's a good spot to get him started. But once again, maybe a horse that's going to appreciate a little more ground in the future.
Well, and this one out of the AP Indy mare, which tells you plenty, and is a full two. Hence, that was the Asmussen, right? I'm going to guess. I think.
Who was it against?
Hence.
Yeah. Hence. Yes. Yeah.
Right. He was a. Was very similar to who's that horse of Asmussen's that Tenfold. He was a 2017 version of Tenfold.
Yeah.
Right, there's the Asmussen camp has there's certain divisions of these horses that's who Hence reminded me of, thinking back a few years to that one. How about let me ask you about. You've got kind of one from every column here. Looking at Aqueduct as well on Friday, Eddie the Great with Jose Ortiz.
Yeah, this horse he debuted on the Dirty. He ran okay. You know, we're hoping that the mare was decent on the turf. So we're hoping that, you know, he'll move forward on the turf, and more ground monies can kind of go either way, turf or dirt. But he's, you know, we're thinking he'll improve on the dirt for sure. I'm sorry, turf.
Well, and that, yeah, that damn Freudianne, she was all right. The New York, well-known New York family. Nice. And one more at Indiana, too. This is on Thursday. I skipped this one. Como Square in the 6th on Thursday.
Yeah, in the Mischief Philly, that's a half the Caddo River.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, homebred for John and Anthony that we're going to get started. And, you know, if all goes well, we'll pack her down to Oakland this winter. But she's trained well enough. And, you know, another one that might be 5.5 could be a touch short for her, but kind of seems like she showed enough speed to, you know, just get her started and kind of see where she takes us.
Well, and a series of three five-furlong blasts leading into this, including a gate breeze, and out of that very nice mare, Pangburn, absolutely. She was our friends Ed Seltzer and Bev Anderson, Pangburn. Right? Yeah. Nice. Well, Brad, a very satisfying trip out to Del Mar, it would seem.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's Breeders' Cup's always a great weekend. It's, you know, obviously has a very international feel to it. I think that's what makes it so special. And overall, it was a good weekend. Everybody, you know, horses came back, you know, sound and happy and healthy, and now it's time to press on and start getting some wintertime plans ready, and we'll keep moving forward.
Well, a outstanding job having Nick's go stretch out to the mile and a quarter, and do it with real aplomb, and of course, the opportunity to have crowned two champions here, the Essential Quality Medina Spirit and Hot Rod Charlie circumstance, the three sophomores, and, you know, Fold In Life is good, and Jackie's Warrior is a very good season overall for three-year-olds, and the Brad Cox team, a big part of it with Essential. Brad, thanks so much. We'll see you soon. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good, Steve. Talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Brad Cox, everybody. And Nixco, Essential Quality. I suppose that will be the big question that will start to bubble to the surface here, which is the three-year-old championship. It's some very nice resumes, and there's going to be strong advocates for each candidate. You look at Medina Spirit, 9 starts, 4-4-1. Essential Quality, 7 starts, 5-0-1. The Derby, the lone off the board finish. Hot Rod Charlie, 6 starts, 2-1-2-1 with the fourth. First time he's off the board this year. And, you know, he's probably, I'm going to probably go through this exercise a little bit later today and for tomorrow and for the rest of the week. You know, who disappointed. Hot Rod Charlie, given some of the expectation, I suppose, it really ended up being just Nick's go and the three-year-olds, right? Yeah. I mean, our collector, Tripoli, and Max Player, none really. You know, our collector was chasing. He was closest early to Nick's Go, the first, you know, basically little more than half mile. Then finished sixth. We're going to talk to Michael W. McCarthy next. And McCarthy had a fabulous cup. When you think about, you know, not just CC's performance, but one of the efforts that is going to be appreciated, I think, more as people get a chance to keep watching. Smooth Like Straight, that try in the mile, I mean, absolutely, in fact, what I thought, you know, I think I ended up, if I put him fourth, I think I put him fourth, because it figured that, you know, he would take him a long way. He ran great. I'm looking forward to getting Michael's thoughts. Of course, the Cannon homebred. Speaking of homebreds, I mean, Godolphin wins three. There were five homebred winners on the weekend. When you add in, you can add in Bobby Flay, obviously, right? And the other, who was the fifth one? There's Michael. All right, there's Michael McCarthy. Oh, Bo Hirsch. There it is. CC. It was right in front of me the whole time. Bo Hirsch was the fifth homebred winner of the weekend, and absolutely timed to the minute, trained to the minute, as they say. Michael W. McCarthy joins us, and Michael, congratulations to you and Bo on the filly and mare sprint win, as well as the Cannon Thoroughbred people with Smooth Like Straight's excellent effort in the mile.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, Michael, this is one of those situations when it comes to the filly and mare sprint. Everybody knows what to expect. And, in fact, in all of the dirt races Saturday, we knew exactly where the key player was going to be, whether it was Gamine, Nick's Go, Latruska, Jackie's Warrior, and Life is Good. I mean, all the dirt races had kind of the same storyline going in. What was your thought? And talk about how you and Victor were basically planning to attack with CC.
On paper, it's pretty simple. You had Gamine in there, Bella Sophia, both fillies with similar styles. You knew they both of them were going to probably hook up at some stage, and we thought our filly would be best if we could just go ahead and sit right off of them and let them go ahead and do the dirty work. It almost looked like it was too good to be true on paper, and that's the way things kind of drew up once the gates opened. And you know, Victor had a plan the whole time. He said he was going to bounce away from there and kind of try to keep them honest. And that's exactly what happened. Those two fillies went on about their business, and best horse won on the day.
Were you surprised at the lack of participation in this race?
I guess you could say yes. I don't know. I can only speak for myself. You know, it's an awful tough thing to get to these races, then to go ahead to get to Breeders' Cup week and jump through all the hoops. A lot of protocols you've got to go through to line up in the starting gate. But it's a long year. These fillies are very fast. You know, sometimes it takes a lot to manage them. Yeah, I was surprised by the small by the small numbers, but obviously plenty of quality in there.
Did you were you concerned that the lack of you know, much more pace pressure would play against CC, and how did you and Victor essentially plot and think the race might unfold, and how you could, you know, basically affect best chance for her to win?
You know, we ran against Gamine earlier in the summer in Saratoga. She was able to kind of go ahead and dictate her everything her own way that day. And she's actually had that happen to her a couple of times. No one's run with her. She's found herself on an easy lead. Rest is history, you know. On Racing's championship day, you can't expect to get anything easy, really. Two fillies on paper that had two similar styles. They went ahead. Each rider rode their own race. Victor rode his own race. You know, I don't think it's one of those. It wasn't kind of like a fluky type of thing by any means. My filly's been very good all year. Was very good last year. Won two grade ones. Ran, I don't know what it was, eight times or what have you, seven times. Strangely enough, I don't believe she got a single mention in any kind of Eclipse Award things. I don't think you even voted for. I was a little upset about that. Was kind of determined not to let that happen this year. We showed up in all the right spots. You know, I don't know what else to say. Happy for Cece, first and foremost. I felt, you know, she's finally, I don't want to say she validated herself. She just kind of did what I thought all along of her last year when she won the Apple Blossom last year. I thought it was a very good performance coming from the 14 hole. Caught a couple of racetracks that maybe she didn't like. Maybe I made a wrong move or two with some race placement or what have you, but it all worked out this year.
Not only happy for CC, got to be happy for Victor Espinoza, who continues to work back from an injury, and then talk about the satisfaction for Bo Hirsch on the home ice, as it were.
Yeah, for Victor, I mean, this is obviously, he's had some up and down years here the last probably 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer than that. Obviously, coming off of an all-time high, winning a Triple Crown on American Pharoah, and then finding himself a couple years later faced with the risk of, or the, you know, possibility of not being able to ride anymore after an accident at Del Mar. They are the toughest athletes in the world. I believe it's the only sport I've ever seen where an ambulance actually chases them, you know? So obviously for Victor, I'm just so happy that, you know, he's come back and gotten back to the pinnacle of our game. And he'll continue to do so. And for Bo Hirsch, made mention that he was kind of a native son around Del Mar. And that's the truth. His father, Clement, was one of the, you know, one of the visionaries of the Del Mar, you know, the whole Del Mar kind of thoroughbred club aspect. Bo's a well-liked figure around there. He's quite a character. He's part of the fabric of the California thoroughbred breeding game and California racing game. So happy to go ahead and be able to do something like this and knock out a big one in his own backyard, Del Mar.
CC, an elusive quality out of the Belong to Me mare, Miss Houdini, and you know, you look at the record now. It's pretty. It was good going in, and now it's even. Now it's even more impressive. 8 wins in 16 starts, and then add in another 600,000 on the 520,000 on the earning front, so 1.7 million. Boy, I'm looking also 3 for 5 at 7/8, Michael, as well. Had only run the one time last year in the Clement Hirsch, and I remember when we, you know, when we talked leading in to that, you know, that was obviously the rationale was apparent, but you know, this is clearly her best aptitude is, you know, the 6.5-7 furlong not really excelling.
Exactly. You know, I thought the Derby City Distaff last year, she just kind of was out in the middle of the racetrack and might have been a little bit closer that day than we would have liked, but nobody's fault, really. As I said, she put together a very respectable resume last year, danced a lot of dances in top-class caliber company. The Clement Hirsch last year, obviously your hands are pretty tied when your owner has a has a race named after his father, and you happen to fit the conditions. You're not, there's not really much way of getting around that. But we knew she was probably not at her best on these deeper surfaces that we've had out here in California for the last couple of years. So we decided backing her up to one turn this year, you know, might work in her favor. She's a wonderful mare. She is a third generation grade one winner, has a brother that's a grade one winner in Papa Clem, an Arkansas Derby winner. Grand Dam is a grade one winner. Dam's a grade one winner. So she is certainly a collector's item for sure.
You know what's also notable is that the four wins this year, Michael, all by open lengths.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Two and a half Saturday, five in the Chillingworth, three and a quarter in the Princess Rooney, and in the allowance win. All open length victories.
Yeah, just she's been very good this year, very sharp. She seemed to elevate her game this year, taking her to one turn, and she knows when it's game day.
CC and Edgeway aggressively placed by Rosario inside and finished well to be second. Gamin settles for third at 2-5, the Philly and Mare sprint. And before we talk about Smooth Like Straight, let's fold in, you know, your increasingly outstanding record in the Breeders' Cup, Michael, and it's been a great year. Obviously, you win a classic at the, you know, midseason with the Preakness, and a Breeders' Cup race to add you know, to the haul on the year.
Yeah, the crazy thing is that both the Preakness winner, Lombauer, and the Philly Mare Sprint winner, CC, both homebreds, both raised at Columbiana Farm, Columbiana Farm raised CC, at Columbiana Farm raised Smooth Like Straight, but to have our two biggest weekends this year come with homebreds is pretty satisfying for us, obviously.
You had the City of Light Dirt Mile win, and when it comes to placements, Vibrance going back 3 years as well to the Juvenile Fillies, and then now a placement with Smooth Like Straight. Talk about his effort in the mile.
Yeah. Of course, he showed up all year long running against the best company in California. What can I say? He just lays his body down every time. I think we've had four beats now by about the length of your arm. Saturday's was no different. I thought when he cut the corner and opened up a little bit, I thought that was going to be enough to hold on. Then I saw the English horse coming, and it was, like I said, it was reminiscent of what we saw in the Eddie Reed, reminiscent of what we saw in the Del Mar Mile. On one hand, you're very proud of the horse. The other hand, you're just wishing, you know, one of these things would have gone his way at some time. But they will. He'll stay in training as a five-year-old. He'll be bigger, he'll be stronger, and I'm sure he'll be better. Breeders' Cup is obviously a big deal for any trainer. For me, you know, being lucky enough to participate in so many of them during my time at Todd Pletcher's, you know what it takes to get there, and you know what it means to win something like that. We've been very lucky over the last 3 or 4 years to be able to participate in these kind of races. It's kind of what you dream about. It's obviously what everybody in this game dreams about, and it's the whole spectacle of it is just really it's such a fun week. There's plenty of stress added in, but you can sit back and enjoy it on race day. And once the horses walk out on the racetrack, you know, your job is done. As I heard Jerry Bailey say one time, you know, he was responsible for the effort, not for the outcome. So whatever he placed on himself, you know, he would try his best, do his best, and the horse was best. And, you know, things usually worked out the way they're supposed to. But, yeah, Breeders' Cup is something we kind of hope to target at the end of the year. Hopefully we have the horsepower to target at the end of the year. You know, we've gone, you know, I think Churchill Downs was our first Breeders' Cup we participated in 3 years ago, and lucky enough to run five horses that weekend and came back at Keeneland and ran, you know, four more horses the following year. Two years later, we skipped a year there, and then, you know, to come into the Breeders' Cup with two very live horses this year, it's very gratifying. You know, happy for all the guys that make it happen behind the scenes.
Well, and also, on a team basis, it just occurs to me, too, you're part of the Eclipse Thoroughbred family, and, you know, we talked to Wayne earlier about their win, and, you know, even though it's not a horse in the barn, you know, kind of a collective, it seems like, you know, that had to be fun, and you had to be delighted for Aaron and the partners.
Always. I mean, first and foremost, we've been friends for a long time. I'm lucky enough to have a successful business partnership, but, to be able to see that horse put his nose down on the wire, I was thrilled for Aaron. I was also sick for the Cohens, you know, Rancho Temescal, Red Baron's barn. They put a lot into California racing, and they've done a ton for it, and also are nice enough to be supporters of mine too. So it was one of those things. It was tough for one of neither horse deserved to get beat in a race like that. But Eclipse has been staunch supporters of mine since we've gotten started, and happy for everybody involved.
A couple of things away from Breeders' Cup too. I did see that on Thursday that nicely bred Z-Barth colt finally got the W. Warbird
won, going a mile and a quarter at Churchill Downs on the dirt. He was a, I believe that was his seventh start, nice way to break his maiden in a $120,000 maiden race, courtesy of Churchill Downs. That's a pretty hefty number for a horse that, you know, had a hard time finding the winner's circle. So to be able to find a race that distance for a horse that specializes in something like that, pretty nice. Very nice payday. Happy for the Z-Bars.
And this was a colt. The fillies out of that mare, that Tis Flirtatious, she was a major stake horse.
Yes,
the dam.
Yes, heck of a pedigree there on the dam side. You know, this horse has kind of told us all along that the farther he goes, the better off he's going to be. It's taken him a while to come to hand. He's a massive horse. He's nearly 18 hands. I mean, he is huge. So hopefully this kind of gets him going in the right direction. His races on the turf are actually fairly decent too. So I think with more than anything with him, he is a distance dependent kind of he will be definitely a route specialist, a marathon specialist, whether that's on the dirt or turf going forward, I do not know.
Well, sounds like the San Juan Capistrano might be in his future.
I think so. I think you're really right there. That's kind of something that popped into your mind. But, you know, you've got, great thing is, you got Belmont weekend. You've got those, you know, 2 mile races or mile and 5/8. I can't remember what it is. Now there's races all over the country for a horse that specializes in something like that. You know, we had a few steeplechase guys. Sean Clancy was always hot on the horse's tail, you know. Asked him what's going on with him, any chance he'd be for sale as a jumper or not. And I kept on telling him, not yet. We're getting there. We're getting closer, you know. I'd always been a fan of the horse, but like I said, you open up condition books across so many racetracks now, and it's very vanilla. It's 6 furlongs on the dirt, mile on the dirt, mile on the turf, sometimes 5.5 on the turf. So Obviously grateful that Churchill Downs offers races like that. I think it's great for the betters too, because I think extra furlongs, added furlongs, are sometimes a great equalizer in some of these races. I think a lot of horses prefer 7/8 to 6 furlongs. I think a lot of horses prefer a mile and an eighth and a mile and a quarter to a flat mile. You know, sometimes that's the way you find a lobster. Horse might be slow at a mile and might be very good going a mile and a quarter. So, you know, they get found out going a mile, but stretch them out a little bit, find something that you think they might like, and, you know, next thing you know, you've got yourself a winner. So that's part of the deal. I think it's become challenging to place horses a lot of times because guys don't want to run them farther than a mile or don't like a mile and a quarter or what have you. But there's a whole class of horses out there that are dying for this kind of stuff.
Got to also, in addition to a horse like this with a breakthrough win, the 3-year-old Warbird, I got to ask you about Independence Hall, the Fayette win last week.
Nice of him to show up in the style in which he did. I think we found something out that, you know, he obviously liked being on the lead. He likes being in a fight. Kept top-class company all summer long. We got into a little bit of a funny position, a funny spot this year. We thought maybe a race like the Charlestown Classic going a mile and eight might suit him, and we opted to go for the Pacific Classic going a mile and a quarter. And maybe that's found him out. Maybe he doesn't want a mile and a quarter, but it looked like he handled a mile and an eighth well the other day. We'll give some thought to the Clark and a long, hard look at a race like the Cigar Mile. He's exciting prospect, exciting stallion prospect. He's by constitution. He's got probably a better horse on the ground, better looking horse on the ground. You'll be hard pressed to find. He is absolutely stunning. He's got, you know, big wins. You know, as a 2-year-old, open ranks wins here in the Fayette. Hopefully a big one in him going back to Aqueduct in the Cigar or right there again at Churchill Downs. You know, I thought his race in the Lucas Classic was very good, but we'll take one more swing at it before he heads off to the Stallion Barn at Windstar.
Well, and that just, that news came last week, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think he is, for value breeders, I believe he's going to stand for 10,000. I think he is absolutely can't miss.
Well, a chance to enhance that 10,000 and maybe kick it up a notch if he was to win something like the Cigar, particularly the Grade One, and nothing wrong with adding a Clark. That it would seem that the Cigar Mile, Michael, it makes just a little bit more sense from a enhanced value standpoint, right? The one turn mile. I mean, with the Fayette win, he pretty much, you know, I don't know if the Clark means as much at this point as a Cigar would.
Exactly. You know, horses come out of his race in good order, and he'll get back to the work tab this coming weekend. And I'll get with Elliot, Randy Gallott, and Eric Wellman, and we'll come up with a game plan here, but it's exciting to have, you know, those two options out there. And exciting that the horse is kind of doing as well as he's been doing here the last couple of months.
Well, the series of successes is all adding up. It's already been established. This is your best year in business, and there's still more to come. And in fact, there's a couple of maidens coming up on Friday at Del Mar. Tell us about Four Flag and Pretty Rena on Friday.
Four Flag, I thought he was unlucky. Last couple races, Dave Flavian rode him at Del Mar. I thought he would just win. Kind of found himself in the middle of the pack, and I don't think he closed kind of with the flurry that we thought he would. He's a little bit kind of one pace, but I think he's in a good spot on Friday. Horses continue to train well. I think he is primed for a big race here on Friday. I'd be disappointed if he doesn't get the money.
And Pretty Rena, she's a more than ready that actually was bred by Bob LaPenta. This is a two-year-old out of a Tappet mare, Sally Ride, and the Danielles and LaPenta own this one.
Yeah, typical more than ready. I think she really, really appreciates the grass. I was looking forward to stretching her out. Race did not fill going a mile this week. Actually, it did fill. We were first on the alsos. Nobody scratched. Race came back on the overnight. Apparently didn't garner enough support, which is disappointing. But they offered a 5-furlong maiden race on the turf. And we'll go ahead and let her sprint one more time. I think her best days might be going a little bit farther. But I think 5-8 should be just fine. I don't think she is one of those real speed demons, but she should be good enough to make some noise. But I think her best days when we go 6 furlongs and farther.
Well, Michael, as always, a pleasure to catch up and congratulate you after a big, big win. And CC, clearly makes the filly and mare sprint championship conversation going to be one of a few different conversations that are going to be rather heated. So it'll be, and I know where you stand.
As you know, I mean, they call the Breeders' Cup Racing's championship day. We showed up, obviously, don't know, I can't speak for anybody else, but we were there, we showed up, we took care of what we needed to take care of, so we'll let the chips fall as they may from there, but I can't thank you enough for having me on. I'm glad you're feeling better. I know you were out of action couple of weeks, so it's good to hear your voice. You got a lot of good things going on. Looks like you just became a grandfather.
Yeah.
So good stuff. It's been a good month. Good couple of months for both of us, I guess.
Absolutely. And you've got good things happening too. Ron Bauer back in the barn and back out every morning.
Ron Bauer back in the barn, been galloping here a handful of days, and might try to slide to start into him right at the end of the year, or maybe just after the first of the year. Horse looks well, couldn't be doing any better. He's got a little bit of a pot belly and seems to be glad here, glad to be back here. So, we'll kind of let him tell us when he's ready to roll. But there's obviously big races out there with his name on it. And we're looking forward to kind of leading him over there.
Would you, if he was fit and ready, would you think about the Malibu for him?
I don't think 7/8 is his type of thing. But if not the Malibu, something shortly thereafter. But we'll see. As I said, I'm just going to go ahead and let him tell us kind of when he's ready to kind of get the show on the road.
Interesting. Yeah, because, it's one of those end of the year, start of the next year, the last opportunity for a grade one and those kinds of things. And it is going to be interesting to see who shows up and who who starts to point how and now you're making me think one more question for the rest of November. What's the lineup look like at Del Mar for the rest of the month?
I think we've got a couple horses here that seem like they are doing well. Had a horse that was nominated to the Breeders' Cup Turf and entered in the Breeders' Cup Turf, who was way down on earnings and points. A horse named Friars Road, who, much like Warbird, once he found his game going an added distance of ground, was very impressive going 1.375 on the turf at Del Mar this summer. Was just got lipped out, and the John Henry came flying late, weaving through horses. He could find himself in something like the Turf Cup down here November 26th. And obviously might find himself in a few, kind of graded stake type spots here early in throughout the winter and early in the spring. But we feel like if he stays healthy, he's definitely going to make some noise. I have a lot of faith in that horse.
Nice. Friars Road. Absolutely. Well, Michael, this was great. I appreciate it, and look forward to catching up soon and seeing what's next for Stable Stars. You're making them all into Stable Stars.
I appreciate that. Glad you're back. Like I said, glad you're healthy. Hope everybody stays healthy. Speak to you guys again soon.
Michael, thank you. Michael W. McCarthy, MWM Racing on your Twitter machine. And what a great job he does. I mean, when his horses show up in big spots, it's not an accident, and it's not, you know, just to get a nice table in the dining room. Right? Yeah. That's a big part of his approach. You know that they're going to be ready to fire. And both of them did. CC and Smooth Like Straight. And that really did sound like a glowing endorsement for Friars Road. Wouldn't have taken much more either. You know, he was funny. He was fourth on that AE list, and Bolshoi Ballet and Channelmaker, who, by the way, very quietly, we just got a couple of minutes here to close out. Very quietly, Channelmaker, he ended up fifth, right? I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he ended up fifth. Yeah. Yeah. 55-1, beaten. 1, 2, 3, 4. Beaten 4 3/4 lengths for everything. Ran very credibly. Got past, obviously, Yabir. We haven't talked about the turf yet. A lot of similarities this year to last year's mile when, you know, it was the O'Brien army that ran 1, 2, 3. Here you had a nice mix and match. O'Brien second and fourth with Broom and Japan. Japan ran well at 22-1 after being, you know, kind of thought of as a no chancer. We'll have to talk about, you know, Tarnawa, who just languished early and never mounted any kind of a run. That was one of the day's surprises. I mean, some horses that were down the charts had excuses, you know, that at least inhibited their tries. Mo Forza got absolutely scrunched early in the mile, and instead of being able to gain position, ended up at may have been last, but there was basically a scrum. That horse, the horse of O'Brien's, came over from the one side. Mother Earth came over, and then on the inside, In Love, and also who else was it? There were two or three from the inside. Well, Space Blues. Space Blues was actually part of that. Watch the head on. There's from about 2 to 7, they all converge, and Mo Forza took the worst of it, and that was pretty much it. We talked about the collapse. That was no surprise the way they went in the Distaff. We'll get into. I'm looking forward, actually, not just to Sid's visit, but also Dick, because, you know, Dick talked about Deep Impact in particular, and that's a race that we haven't discussed yet. The wonderful effort by Loves Only You, and that Yoshito Yahagi, the two wins, and that finish, that explosive kick, because she was basically a stalk and go. She was well positioned throughout, and I went too deep in there with the love exacta, Loves Only You and Love, and you know, Warlike Goddess. I understand, you know, she got over bet and she was going to be up against it, but she ran well. Don't make no mistake. She ended up third, beaten, you know, less than a length. My Sister Nat ran huge, and actually, we should mention nobody had worse luck on the weekend than Chad Brown. When it comes to losing two starters in Jack Christopher and Domestic Spending, and I don't know how much I don't know how much conversation there's been about the wrongheadedness of not letting Jack Christopher participate, but I think we've a lot of us have kind of forgot about that already. But then, you know, Chad gets a great effort from My Sister Nat, and what can you say about Dunbar Road? 12-1, and ran just a terrific race. Royal Flag ran okay, lost ground, but it was Dunbar Road who looked for a couple of strides like she was going to win. So 2 seconds from Chad, and to have his other, you know, his two best chances not be able to participate. Bad, really, really bad luck. Well, we got so much more to do tomorrow. And it'll include visits from Jay Primman and Andy Serling, as well as we have to get to Wesley Ward and Todd, and much more. All right. Have also got to get the rest of the weekend reported on, right? It's not just Breeders' Cup. Congratulations from late last week. Our friend Michael Trombetta, win number 2,000 in Michael's fabulous career. And Rodney Prescott got win 4,000. So a couple of milestones to slide in there. Plenty more to discuss. And then we got the BCBC to dive into, and more tales of betting intrigue from the weekend, as well as, of course, the sale. Keeneland getting started, and the Knight of Stars at Phasic tomorrow as well. All right. Enjoy the day. Plenty of good racing. Money won on Monday after Breeders' Cup is just as valuable as money won on Breeders' Cup. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Bobby Flay, Wayne Catalano, Mike Hopkins, and Bob Duncan to explain Friday's disaster, Brad Cox, and Michael W. McCarthy. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America, but we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds, and we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.